We are recording, everyone, just so you know. YouTube's going. Good evening, everyone. We're going to get started. I ask that we all rise for the Pledge of the Flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Francis Smith.
Present.
Ms. Quiatek.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon. Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Councilwoman Leon is not going to be with us this evening as she is on vacation. So we have a public hearing tonight. Prior to consideration of the regular agenda item, the City Council will conduct a public hearing. Public hearing number one is going to be related to the Department of Community and Economic Development's 2025 CDBG and home funding recommendations. This public hearing is for informational purposes only. There will be no votes taken during the public hearing. In connection with this public hearing, there is one communication. Mr. Miller, please read that communication.
The June 25th, 2025 memorandum from Robert Vidoni, Housing and Community Development Administrator, submitting materials for review by City Council during this evening's public hearing for the 2025 Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnership Program allocation. For program year 2025, the City will receive $1,418,306 in CDBG funds and $417,183.96 in home money.
Thank you. Public hearing is called to order. I'll start with whoever from the administration wants to discuss the proposed 2025 CDBG and home funding recommendations. Mr. Vidoni, I see you come to the mic. If you don't mind just identifying yourself for the audience who might not be familiar with who you are, Mr. Vidoni.
Hello, Mr. Cologne. My name is Robert Vidoni. I'm the Housing and Community Development Administrator for the City of Bethlehem, the CDBG and home manager. And today I will try to keep this brief. So this is, we have an annual hearing, we have two annual hearings every year, and this is our annual hearing in council. And tonight we are here to go through the administration's proposed program year 2025 CDBG and home allocations, and also talk a little about our annual action plan process and our consolidated planning process. So do you have a presentation? So I'm just going to run through that. So recently, HUD released our allocations for program year 2025. And compared to 2024, our CDBG award was basically the same, went up by $3,000, and our home award increased approximately 15%. Again, our 2025 CDBG award was $1,418,000 and change, and our home award was $417,000 and change. So just a quick summary. Community Development Block Grant funding is federal funding, and it comes to us through an annual formula that HUD applies to our jurisdiction based upon a bunch of demographic and housing factors. So there's a formula used to come up with what the city gets on an annual basis. CDBG activities have to either benefit low and moderate income populations, prevent or eliminate slums or blight, or address urgent community needs. And with our program, basically low and moderate income populations are those that are targeted with this funding. So CDBG funding supports a wide variety of activities, whether it's economic development, revitalizing neighborhoods, blight, housing initiatives, improving facilities and services, and public services. So a grantee like the City of Bethlehem, we operate on an annual cycle, and we also operate on a five-year consolidated planning cycle. So this cycle, we have our 2025 action plan as well as our next five-year consolidated plan. So today's hearing is part of those, basically part of those two processes. The home program. The Home Investment Partnerships Program was established in 1990 to assist low-income households Funds are awarded annually as a formula grant based on housing supply, poverty, and other factors. The program funds housing activities including direct rental and purchase assistance, building, acquiring, and rehabilitating affordable housing for rent or ownership. All home money is directed towards families that are at or below 80% of the area median income. The intent of the home program is to increase the supply and quality of affordable housing, to help expand the nonprofit sector in connection with its capacity to build and rehab housing, to strengthen state and local government capacity to provide housing, and to leverage private sector investment. That's very important, the leveraging aspect for both CDBG and home. This money is meant to sort of build project capital stacks and to be assembled with other funding. That's a key purpose. So, as to the City of Bethlehem Home Programs, currently we have a Home Buyer Purchaser Assistance Program, the Bethlehem Home Buyer Assistance Program called BHAP, and that's in part administered by a nonprofit partner. We also have we can accept home applications for construction of new housing, construction of new rental housing, and rehabilitation of housing. So now just to get to our 2025, the administration's recommendations, proposals, requests that are coming to council right now. So for our program year 2025, we had 23 CDBG funding requests totaling $1,837,912. 20 requests were recommended for funding, totaling $1,418,306. So there were 15 external non-city applicants, and 13 of those were recommended for funding. Home, we had three applications that were all recommended for funding. But I just want to back up for a second. I missed something very important. So CDBG, there's a very large constraint that we face, is that there is a limitation of 15%. We cannot give out more public service funding on an annual basis than is equal to 15% of our annual grant. And right now that means that we hit our cap at around $212,000. By far the largest, we always have many, many more public service requests that come in from nonprofits than we can fund under these cap constraints. So whenever you're looking at a potential CDBG program, that's a vital thing to know. We would obviously, all the applications were great applications, were great programs, and it's just impossible to fund all of those public service applicants. There will be a little more on that. So generally, unfunded CDBG applicants are encouraged to apply for future CDB grant funding, subject to continued funding availability. On an annual basis, we usually open CDBG applications in the winter, and we evaluate the applications in the spring. And then it's closer to the end of the year that we usually get the money from HUD, and then we engage, we execute grant agreements, and then we're actually able to start distributing the money and start the projects. So when we are unable to fund applicants, generally we recommend they also inquire or figure out whether they're eligible for other city resources and grant programs, particularly the Community Recovery Fund. That would be the next cycle in 2026. Also, we attempt to direct them to other state, local, and federal resources. So, in terms of our 2025 recommended allocations, 20% is capped for administration. That's a program admin. We discussed the 15% service cap. So right now we are recommending that 49% of the allocation go towards housing activities. Public facilities is 14%, and the neighborhood revitalization strategy area, which is also called the North Side Alive, that's 2% of this particular grant. The next page for home, we have a 10% recommendation, and under the home program, capped at 10% for program admin. There's also a mandatory allocation for community housing development organizations, and that's a minimum 15% allocation. And then we have an additional future affordable housing projects. So I will just quickly run through. I know there will be questions. I'm just going to run through recommended projects. I try not to dwell on them too long. So this project list comes from the allocation spreadsheet, which you all have, and copies are out there. So for CDBG program administration, 20%. We recommended the $283,661. For Community Action Development Corporation, Bethlehem Tenant Advocacy Program, it's a $15,000 allocation. Bethlehem Emergency Shelter, $67,746. Hogar CREA, recommending $20,000. Lehigh Valley Center for Independent Living, $15,000. As you can see, Share Care Volunteer Caregiving, $10,000. Hispanic Center, Lehigh Valley Food Pantry, is a $20,000 recommended allocation. New Bethany Representative Payee Program is $50,000 recommended. North Penn Legal Services, $15,000. CALV, Bethlehem Homebuyer Assistance Program Administration and Housing Counseling, $25,000. Community Action Bethlehem Residential Facade Rehab Program, $66,000. On the next page, we have City Housing Rehab Grants and Loans. This is $358,000 change. Program delivery, which is related to our owner-occupied housing rehab program, $241,500. New Bethany Drop-In Center construction for $75,000. Holy Family Senior Center Fire System Improvements, $75,000. Gap Street Corridor Improvements, $199,990. City West 4th Street Corridor Improvements, $100,000. Future projects, $53,104. 19 is Northside Alive Strategy Preparation. That's $24,710. And the City Redevelopment Authority Blight Elimination Program, $30,641. As you can see, the recommended home allocations are on the next page. So we have City Program Admin, $41,718. CHOTO allocation, that's the minimum we have to have, at least 15%, $62,578. And Affordable Housing Project Requests, $312,888. Important part of, I guess, a distinction between CDBG and home, we accept CDBG applications during a fixed period each year when we open. Home applications are accepted on a rolling basis. Home applications are very complex. I mean, all of this money is heavily regulated. And when we evaluate applications, a key part of that is taking into account, not just prior year grant funding to this applicant, but can the applicant, is the applicant well suited to handle the administrative requirements and burdens of the money? Applications can take months, particularly home applications, to go through and to underwrite them and to basically come up with all the documents that you need to put in the file for HUD and when they come and monitor the programs. So that is an important thing to have some funding that is available when applications come in is a very important planning aspect. So, as I mentioned before, we are in our five-year consolidated planning process, so I'm not going to go through every single one of these slides, but slide 18 through, I think, 22. Over this long process, we came up with a bunch of priority needs that were identified through consultation with a wide range of local nonprofits, organizations, individuals, stakeholders. And so we basically have the priority needs summarized in these slides, as well as sort of outcome indicators. But if you're interested to look at those, I'm not going to go through every single one. Now, assuming there may be more detailed questions, but in terms of next steps in this process, the administration is planning on submitting a resolution for council consideration at the July 15th council meeting, and that would be requesting approval to submit the recommended allocations to HUD along with planning documents for our annual action plan, five-year consolidated plan, and other ancillary documents. So we are under a strict HUD deadline. The next sort of provided CDBG funding is still here. We heavily publicize the applications, and hopefully come fall and winter, we're going to go out to the community and again say we are opening up CDBG applications. I went quickly through the actual programs because many of you have heard about them before, and I figure you may have individual questions on those.
Thank you, Mr. Bedoni. Anything else from the administration? Thank you. I'll open it up to members of council. Any questions or comments from Mr. Bedoni regarding his presentation? I'll start with Councilwoman Blair.
Thank you for your presentation. A few questions. So when we're looking at the timeline and funds become available, most likely towards the end of the year that they're being used for, can you just, it's a refresher question. This is reimbursement funding, right? So
correct.
These programs are underway. They're not waiting necessarily for this funding to come through, but they may be planning on that reimbursement coming in.
Different organizations handle that in a different way. So when we execute grant agreements, the grant agreement covers the year starting January 1st for incurred costs. Some organizations wait until they actually have the executed contract. It depends on their their individual financial controls and practices, but they're all reimbursements.
Oh, okay. And for the home funding, you talked about the complexity of the applications. And some of that seems, I understand, like that's not something that the city can do anything about. Those are federal guidelines for all of the auditing and all of that that has to take place. But when we're talking about vulnerable populations who benefit from those dollars, then it seems like there might already be some extra barriers in place. And then it's a really, really onerous process to get access to the funding. Are we allowed to use any of the funding to create opportunities or tools to help people with the process?
Well, that's a huge part of what we do. We're always available to provide technical assistance. I frequently talk to organizations or individuals who, hey, is this project potentially, could we possibly get home money here, or is the CDBG eligible? So we spend a lot of time talking with organizations and individuals about possible projects. That's a huge part. We are always here to assist in that respect. In terms of, it is absolutely a barrier. I agree 100%. It's hard to get around that barrier, but we attempt to give maximal assistance and attention to individuals and organizations when they, if they have a project that's reasonably eligible and we think this is plausible and doesn't present immense financial or legal risk to the city. I mean, those things are all factors, but we absolutely are always here to talk to anybody about potential projects and we'll help them through that process.
Okay, so when it says like a certain percentage of the funding is for administration, then that includes helping people through the process?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. And then I had one other question that I am now looking on. Oh, the facade improvement, the residential facade program? I'm somewhat familiar with that program from some work I've done with Northside Alive, and I know that for a while there was a challenge getting enough contractors to provide bids to get it approved through the process, and therefore some of the money was just kind of sitting. Are we still running into issues with that type of thing, or has the contractor market become more responsive to quotes for those types of jobs?
The contractor challenge still exists, and that's a sort of balancing struggle to find contractors that can deal with the compliance and turn out a good product, you know, in a reasonable time frame. And again, we work with the sub-recipients to try to balance red tape. And I mean, these programs are here to try to get the money out in the community organizations and to individuals to actually, you know, help people. And it is a barrier. Often the administrative red tape, it's a barrier. So we have a give and take as to what, there's certain things we absolutely have to require. And it's a sort of ongoing conversation. It's a huge challenge of my job is how to balance liability protection. I mean, we could protect ourselves maximally by not granting any funds. Okay, so, but that's not a good option. So we are, I think those challenges are still there, but we try on an annual basis. We're constantly asking, is this particular requirement overly onerous? You know, what's the proper balance in here?
Okay. And then thinking forward, like it said, as long as funds are available, people are encouraged to apply. You maybe didn't get funds this time. Is there any more sense at this point of whether these funds will continue into future years? Is that looking pretty solid at this point, or?
I wouldn't say solid. I would say that as you know, so in trying to figure out this the big beautiful bill passed in the Senate today, and trying to figure out, well, what is in that, you know, it was not clear that the HUD funding for these programs was touched in the 900-page the big beautiful bill. However, we're monitoring it and working on, you know, there's a whole committee process. So as to what we looked at before this meeting, we did not see, you know, no more CDBG or we're funding at 50%. We are paying attention to it and trying to figure that out. I wouldn't say it is clear at this point in time.
Thank you.
And just to add to that, two things. One is he's referring to that descriptively, not as the way he feels about what's in the bill.
Yes.
And it also, the name has also been officially changed as happens as far as the bill is concerned. But it was, what's likely to include CDBG is more likely to include what their fiscal year appropriation is that they're talking about doing by the end of July. So untouched by whatever shenanigans have occurred over the past 24 hours and what shenanigans are going to occur moving forward. So separate kind of budget resolution, if they're doing a continuing resolution or a full year, I think that's up for conversation as far as what they were going to do. But it was not something, future CDBG allocations, not necessarily something that they could touch through the reconciliation process, which is what they have been trying to get around as much as they can over the past couple of weeks.
It was a, you know, more limited scope. And just for the record and for the minutes, we will insert the correct bill number. And now I'll call it the July 1st Senate Reconciliation Bill.
Just in case one of the reporters is watching and then quotes you in the article. I don't want us to have anybody there. So, thank you.
Thank you.
So I will recognize Mayor Reynolds joined us. Welcome, Mayor. Any other questions for Mr. Redoni or the administration? Mr. Callahan?
The money for the program admin and planning costs, so by law it's only 20% on that and then 10% on the other column. So how many people work on this?
So there are different staff members that work on different components and may have a certain time built to the CDBG or home program. Currently in community development, there's me, we have one grants compliance specialist, we have two housing rehab staff. There are also other DCED staff members that work on different aspects of CDBG or home programs. So, but I would say the core staff right now is four, but there's partial beyond.
So there's you and who else?
There is a grants specialist that's a compliance and monitoring specialist.
Who's that? Like a name, I just don't know.
Ellie Neme. She just started. We're very happy to have her on board.
And who's the third?
The third is Perry Rizzotto, and Sheila Bratt from the housing rehab unit.
Yeah, I just asked because, I mean, are all of them working on it full time?
No.
It's like a part-time thing. Like it's a small part of the year, right?
It's a it sort of depends on the timing, but there's a lot of federal money and other grants that we work on. For instance, the housing rehab staff works on housing rehab cases that could be funded with RDA money, state money. You know, they work with health and they work with health on lead money. So there's various money that goes into these projects. So they're not 100% constantly CDBG or home.
Yeah. How much time out of your whole year would you ask? I mean, you still have the time, but I'm not going to hold you to it. Like,
I mean,
is it 10% of your work year, 20%?
I mean, I would probably say 50-ish.
50?
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, if you add the 283 and then the 41,700 from the other, you know, the other category, it's over $325,000. That just seems a lot of money to be using from these programs that could be used on, you know, for the community on administrative costs. You know, it seems to me, this is just my opinion. I'm not saying it's true, but it's my opinion that we're helping subsidize almost a whole department on these two funds here. I mean, I don't want to go over salaries. I know what your salary is, Ms. Collins, is, you know, based on our budgets. But if you just look at if you guys are working on this full time, it almost pays for you and the other three people.
So
on a full time basis.
I understand. I think just an important aspect of what we do is the grant compliance and the legal aspect. So having money, there are people that need to deal with, like, you can have the money, you can't just, so if you give the money to projects and programs, there's like a long tail of compliance where you have to have people deal with those things, submit HUD reports. So it's the people and the fees that go into admin, it's not just for helping organizations figure out whether they could get CDBG or home, and that's a big part of what we do. It's also going back years and dealing with HUD audits and trying to prevent situations where the city is going to be liable for repayments. So a huge part of it. So if you were to just say, well, let's have no one, I'm not saying anybody's recommending this, you significantly increase the liability of city forced repayments to HUD. So it's a balancing.
Yeah, but it would still be you or one of the other three that are doing this stuff throughout the year, right? I just think that, you know, it's an extreme amount of money to be taken from this program to help fund the administrative aspects of it. I mean, it almost pays for the full-time yearly salaries of you and the other three employees. I'm sure you guys aren't working on it 100% of the year.
Can I
yeah, go ahead.
Respond to that just a bit? You know, I will say I believe that HUD puts the 20% amount there because they anticipate that their grantees will spend around about that for administration because of the compliance challenges, because of the technical assistance, because that is what's required really to run, you know, the CDBG and the home program effectively in entitlement communities and participating jurisdictions, which we are. We have a very lean team compared to our counterparts. I think Allentown's team is about three times the size as ours. And they, you know, similarly, I don't know exactly what the breakdown is, but I would anticipate that they also spend, you know, 20%. Most jurisdictions, I'd say, spend that 20% on their staff and on compliance. And I'll also add that in addition to salaries, we do, like every other jurisdiction, which we've talked about before, we do also have a HUD-specific consultant that assists in compliance matters as well, which is another thing that HUD recommends and that, you know, Allentown, the county, other communities have as well. That's our Michael Baker contract, which you see annually, which is another component of that overall program.
How much is that?
Their contract includes CDBG and other federal compliance that's funded through different funding sources like community project funding. I think the allocation from CDBG is around $90,000.
And what is that for, like, legal advice?
For compliance, right? So that includes ERR assistance, the environmental review process, They have specialists who do that. They have other folks who assist on other compliance matters for both CDBG and HOME.
Absolutely. For all these home HUD projects, you need to do these extensive environmental reviews. Some are easier than others, but some are. It can change over time the allocations and the amounts of time that we're spending over time. But I do think, again, it's very important to understand that at least I think it is, that the compliance protecting the city against repayment liability and mistakes is a vital aspect of our job. And it's not something that is fun or that many people recognize or understand. Everybody gets annoyed with you when you're just trying to deal with the compliance. Everybody hates compliance or people that come in and say, hey, you need to do it this way and blah blah blah. You're not a popular person as the
It would really be impossible to run the program without the staff that we have. And again, we're running it on an extremely lean basis. If the suggestion is pay for it out of general funds and rather than here, I think that would be counter to what most communities do. I think because HUD anticipates that you spend these dollars to run the program, but you certainly need this amount of people, if not more, to run the program.
We have a very lean program.
So Ellie, Carrie, and Sheila, they're full time. That's all they do is this program.
There are multiple federal programs that we work on, and there's multiple state programs. I would say work on projects, and those projects could have federal, state, local money all in one project. And so there's different aspects.
But we are only allowed to bill for the CDBG related projects. Yeah. We can't bill HUD and CDBG dollars unless they're working on CDBG programs. And they, there's rigorous reporting.
Do you have to track the amount of time that they're spending on it?
Yep.
Is there ever a time at the end of the year where there's excess funds left over on the administrative end?
We can roll funds over, yes, if we do.
And if there's money left over from the administrative funding portion of it, we can use that for this year for additional grants to other...
We could never put it into any of the public service projects because that is always capped at 15% of our total allocation. So even if we have leftover admin money, we can't put that into public service projects because no matter where the money's coming from, you can only ever do 15% total.
So we'd have to send the money back to federal government.
We can roll it over year to year and reallocate it.
So projects that aren't subject to caps.
I'm just curious, last year, did we have any money left over from the administrative and then rolled over to this year?
I would like to, I think we should talk, discuss with the business manager. I believe that there were some, I don't know if I'd call them rollover or excess, but there was, I would say yes, but what exactly that came from, we would just need to discuss that.
Is it possible to, not next meeting, whenever you guys can do it, just break down the salaries of those three with yours, just for us to get an idea, and the amount of time that we build to HUD as far as the administrative end of it?
We can talk about it and see what would be appropriate.
I appreciate it. Let's try to get a handle on it a little bit better for next year's fund and for the budget this year. Thank you.
Councilwoman Wallace.
Thank you for the presentation. I guess just to follow up on what Councilman Callahan was saying, I think the way I understand it is that the work that supports administration in this, the funds that support the administration in this work are in service of the organizations who have applied. So you are a part of their team, in essence, just to sort of help myself understand it. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. For instance, an organization, they have a construction project. We work closely. There's organizations we have, biweekly, sometimes weekly meetings. If they're, let's say they're going to go out to bid for a construction project, there's tons of different compliance. We have to look at all the documents, you know, help them look through all their bidding documents to make sure this is there, that's there. We help them with the overall project management. While they're responsible for it, we do have an interest in it, and we work very, very closely on an assortment of different projects with the nonprofits.
So it is a long-term relationship in a sense. And I ask that, I try to frame it that way, just to sort of caution anyone, myself included, to not think of this as that those funds not being in service of those organizations, that in fact it could go elsewhere and serve organizations. It is, those funds are serving organizations. Thank you for helping me understand that. I was curious, did we have any new applicants and or recipients this year?
There were two new applicants.
And recipients?
When I say new, I will say they have not applied in the last maybe three cycles.
Okay.
I can't guarantee they haven't applied since the 90s.
Got it. Are you digging for more information?
No, just in case. Okay. I mean, we generally don't like to. There were.
I don't need to know.
New applicants.
That's all I wanted to know. And how often do we see new applicants coming through?
Most of the applicants are repeat applicants. I would say every 2 years. I mean, we may have a new one to two new ones per cycle. Sometimes there might only be one new applicant. And as was mentioned before, there are very significant barriers to even applying for this money, let alone dealing with all the compliance after your contract.
Yeah, it's not an inviting process. I'm aware of that. And I really do value the efforts that you put into support organizations and making their way through this very, very onerous process. Two quick questions. One is, are there limitations in terms of how many times an organization can apply in succession or to the amount they can apply for based on their own budgets? I'm sorry if you said this already, but I don't recall.
I did not mention that. So we don't have hard and fast rules on you can only apply, as of now, you can apply every year. A big part of our application evaluation is looking to see, have you received funding, going back 5-10 years. I mean, we look at prior grant history, and that's a very important. Another factor is, I would say, how large of a, if you apply and you're asking 100% ask, and you're saying, we would like 100% for the CDBG project, we ideally like to see leverage, other funding, so that the organization has, money and interest in that, in the project. And I would say, in balancing all these different factors, there's a score boost, I would say, when there's other money involved.
But no specific match is required?
Home, we have a 25% match. CDBG, there's not a mandatory match.
Okay. And lastly, you had mentioned sort of soon enough you'll be going out to the community with this information. I think someone asks this every year, but could you say in the microphone how folks can learn where they can find information about the next funding cycle?
It will be on the cities, if they Google City of Bethlehem CDBG, or they call, if they want to call me, or if they would like to email me, they'll find CDBG resources, forms, and discussion of the annual process.
So they're welcome to contact you directly.
Absolutely. I get contacted directly frequently.
I'm sure you do. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Members of Council? Councilwoman Francis Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Vidalmi, and for all these great programs also. I guess I have just observation or question. Most of these programs are, really necessary and are hitting affordable housing, which is great. My only question is, one is, North Penn Legal Services, I see they asked for $25,000 and they got $15,000. And I'm just wondering, because I feel like that is an entity that really can help to keep people in their homes. Like, was there a reason that we couldn't give them what they needed or give them more money?
So there's a cap on public service, so the cap aspect was important to it. Additionally, we have recently given North Penn Legal Services additional funding, and we would have the ability to, if it was characterized, depending upon the activity, you could potentially, but I would say that the public service cap was the main issue. And prior prior funding that they've received, and additionally, the fair housing requirements have been altered on a federal level. So that also, but I would say that the public service cap was the primary constraint with this activity.
What is the cap? Do you know offhand?
It's 15%, and so it's about $212,000, assuming our current allocation amount.
So is, what would the cap be that they could receive? That would be total $200,000 just for all service. So that would be total of all the grants that we give, correct?
This would be the total of, like, if we have a $100 allocation, we can only give $15 for this program year to public service activities. So it's a cap, like, for money coming from us and how that's characterized.
So it would be the whole fund, the whole budget of all the public service program activities,
correct.
Not just like North Penn would have their own cap. It's just within that.
Correct.
Part of that. Okay.
And there's...
Because I guess, you know, I know these programs are very necessary, but I see that as something, because I've just truly have had so many phone calls in the last probably year and a half or 2 years from other elected officials and individuals that were being evicted by, without prior notice, and you know, they needed a lot of legal help, let's put it that way. So I just know that there's a lot of people out there, renters, that really need a lot of legal help, just from my experience in the last year or two. So
and North, I just want to say North Penn Legal Services is an absolutely fantastic organization that provides vital services. I've recommended on many occasions individuals to call.
Right, absolutely, and that's why I would say anything we could do, because I could see them as a service, just based again on all the people that reach out to me that they're really in need of, and I know they're really just like many entities, only they're really like low staff, they're really swamped, and they don't have enough lawyers to do what they need to do. So the other thing I was wondering about is, I guess it's just an observation, is the Gep Street corridor. Now that's part of North Side Alive, but that's $200,000, and it just seems like a lot. Like, I mean, it's certainly, I guess my perspective is, I think it's a great thing to do, but I don't see Gep Street as one of the most highly pedestrian traffic streets in the city, and then I see something like North Penn Legal Services or other areas that need help with affordable housing and legal services, and in my mind, like, because we have such an affordable housing crisis and, you know, economically a crisis for many people, it's probably going to get worse. I would feel like I would prioritize that more so. And then the things that, while it's important, I don't see it that it is a necessity right now, that it could wait, whereas we need to get people housing and that can't wait. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I guess that's just my observation. I just wanted to get, I guess, the thought process of what went into deciding that the $200,000 would go toward Gep Street improvements.
Well, they're in different buckets, just because the Gep Street is not cap, it's not subject to the cap. So the first thing we basically do is, okay, what are the different buckets and how much public service funding do we have? And based on the amount of public service applications that came in, we had dramatically more asks than we were able to fund based on that cap. So it wasn't, so the money wouldn't, the way the activity is structured, be fungible between reducing Gep Street and just moving into North Penn, because North Penn's capped, it's a public service activity.
Would we be able to transfer some of the money at least, or even all of it, if we decided that you could wait from the Gep Street to something that would target more about the housing issue?
There are options to assess whether there could be additional funds that could go, or whether things could be restructured, or whether there could be things that could, but sort of outside the scope of this particular action plan.
I think Robert, is it correct to say, as a short answer, like, no, we cannot move any of the Gep Street money into any of the public service projects. So that includes North Penn, that includes even our housing rehab program. Like, they're not transferable.
Right. And, yeah, you know, you said that. And my question is, can we transfer to any other entity that will help with housing?
Not that has applied. that we have evaluated in this process. So theoretically, if there were a different project that had come forward, like a capital-related project that has a housing component, although those would probably be home dollars, but if there's a way you could fit it into a CDBG category, possibly, but we didn't have a project like that come forward.
Not in this cycle, but it could hypothetically come in the future, yes.
Right. And just to add to that, we try to find people to apply for people within this bucket, understanding the dollars that need to be used here as far as what the cap is compared to the other areas. So whether or not you're looking at New Bethany or Holy Family, like, there, not only are there not other construction applications, we even have reached out. And the few organizations that are willing to take it on have to deal with things like prevailing wage and all sorts of different factors that then they tell us no when we ask them, are they able to apply for it? So when you look at the public service, the ones that could be moved would be out of the other ones that Mr. Bedoni have highlighted in blue that have the PS next to them, with community action, emergency, BES, Hogarth Cray, Lehigh Valley Center for Independent Living, Share Care, Hispanic Center, New Bethany. Those are the only ones to be able to keep within the caps. But on the construction side, we are constantly trying to find other people, and we have other people look into it, but the application doesn't necessarily make sense because what it means as far as compliance for the dollar versus how large their project is going to be and so on and so forth. But in that is always where our first thought is. Like, is there somebody out there doing housing that we can contact to apply that makes sense as far as that project is concerned?
Traditionally, we've had a very hard time finding non-city projects to fund through CDBG with capital dollars. There were a couple years where almost all, like, a ton of money went to, like, our own streets-related projects. You know, in more recent years, you would have seen, like, the YMCA project. Holy Family has come in with capital projects, but there's, as the mayor said, there's very few organizations because of how onerous these dollars are to use and administer that have come in. But we've been fortunate to have more external projects recently.
Yeah, but there are definitely internal frustrations as well as far as what those caps are versus what the demand is out there. Like, if it was up to us and we didn't have to deal with any caps, these numbers would look a lot different. But we're dealing with what we're dealing with partly because of the caps. The other thing that happens in the construction situation too is, like, sometimes projects haven't closed out previous projects that they've taken on, and that's on them to be able to close out with project A from 2017 or 2019 or 2021 before they're necessarily able to apply again and be eligible again. This is a lot of what we do as far as talking about what the best use is and trying to get these organizations to get through these complicated kind of compliance things. And one of the things that Mr. Bedoni does well with his legal background is being able to try to help these organizations who often only have one or two people to be able to get this to the place where they're able to access these dollars. But this is, I mean, I think I've looked at 18 or 19 of these now, and I remember, you know, 20 years ago, you know, Tony Hanna talking about the same issue as far as, like, not only the caps, but also how difficult it is for people outside of City Hall to be able to apply for construction with the different requirements, especially the prevailing wage issue.
Thank you. So I guess there are two questions then related to it, so just so I'm clear. So, like, on page 5, that's where, like, the Geff Street improvement is. So would the other activities above there, like housing rehab, the RDA, the blight prevention, would that money be able to be transferred into those activities then, because it's under the same category?
That is more flexible. Those are not.
I would say those
are more flexible. Those are not subject to caps.
Okay, and then the only other second question is, also, would that money be able to be transferred and used to streets, like we said in the past, we use streets? And again, this is just my mindset, because I'm all about triage and then priority, especially when it comes to money, because of growing up in poverty, let's put it that way. And I think the number one issue that people have out there is housing, and number two are the streets. And it's not like that I'm against Geff Street improvement, but I'm looking in my mind as prioritizing what the people of the city are saying are their big issues. So with that, secondly, could that money be transferred to do the streets as it was done in the past?
It would have to meet a number of criteria. It'd have to be low to moderate income areas. We have, Public Works has not requested money for streets this year. And in terms of community demand, I would argue that, you know, the North Side Alive community-driven neighborhood revitalization strategy area organization, you know, has like that is where that project originated. And, you know, Mr. Vidoni will tell you that the NERSA designation, which is a HUD designation, also has very, you know, strict requirements that we do use dollars in that area. So, you know, looking in the North Satellite area is a priority because, again, that's required by HUD with the designation. So if we're looking in that neighborhood on what are the priority projects, we look to, you know, the community-driven organization for their feedback, and that was the feedback we got from that group, which is why we have prioritized it as a project.
We do. We have to show HUD all sorts of different investment into that area.
It's not just that, you know,
and again, those are my observations and my thoughts. I know that it probably will not happen because I won't. I'll be outvoted on it, but I just think that it may be, you know, now and in the future, it's just a matter of, you know, really prioritizing that which is the most needed in our community. So, thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other comments for Mr. Vidoni or the administration? I'll just make a couple brief questions and then remarks. Mr. Vidoni, the allocations we went over amount to $3,000 more for 2025 than 2024, correct?
Correct.
Is that what do we see or expect as an increase year over year historically? Is the number relatively flat? Have we seen spikes some years over others? Have we seen decreases in general?
I will tell you, we have seen since 1991, we've seen it go up to $2 million. We've seen it's $1,600,000. In the last few years, it's been, if you just give me 1 second here.
I just think we'd all benefit from a general trend if it's been staying the same, decreasing a little bit.
So through 2016, it went up incrementally. You know what I mean? Incrementally, I would say below $100,000 year-over-year increase or decreased incrementally. Like 2016, the CDBG allocation was $1,276,000. The 2024 allocation was $1,415,000, and we're looking at $1,418,000. There's bigger swings in home. Over time, the allocations have reduced, you know, when you can factor in inflation, and they've reduced in an absolute sense and in a relative sense.
Yeah, and I appreciate you mentioning that as it relates to decrease, because like we talked about, sort of like the casino host fee, when a number stays flat, but all the other operating costs, capital costs, personnel costs, everything goes up, even if we're seeing these incremental increases over whatever interval we want to look at, when you factor in inflation and the cost of doing business, we're just not able to get as much done. So I think that's what Bear's mentioning. And you had alluded to there were 23 requests and 20 applications awarded. The three that were not awarded, what's your level of confidence in general that those three, if either other funding sources can't be identified, or is there potential to sort of work with them to make those applications either a grantee next year or find an alternative funding source next year?
I would say some of them, or one of them is a current grantee. Okay. And then two of them, I would say, with some, you know, possibly restructuring or alterations in their application and some discussions about how to structure projects and exactly like what. I would say there is hypothetical future potential depending upon what they were to come with the city with.
Understood. And were they?
I would also just add, I apologize for jumping in. I believe that the others have also already applied for the community recovery fund, or we are going to consider them during the community recovery fund process. And just as a reminder, I mean, that fund was created, you know, when Mayor Reynolds created it, you know, a couple of years ago with the goal of being a more flexible funding source. And you can see that in the number of applicants we have for that program. We have, I believe, this funding source, 75 different organizations have applied. So although you'll only see maybe one or two new organizations apply for CDBG at home every year, because of how onerous that is, you know, on the flip side, because of how we've tried very hard to provide a much more flexible funding source through the Community Recovery Fund, you know, that is an alternative for even those few organizations that aren't CDBG eligible. You know, we will consider them with the Community Recovery Fund applications.
And can you just remind me, in terms of the Community Recovery Fund, when are those grantees announced?
So we just closed the application window, I would say about a month ago. We closed those, so we're in the very initial review stages. We're likely to announce in the fall of this year.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Collins. And then, as you mentioned, Mr. Vedoni, that these are highly regulated dollars. I do just want to point out, you are an attorney. Ms. Collins is an attorney. I believe one of the staff members who worked under you is an attorney, correct?
Currently, both a paralegal and previously an attorney.
An attorney. So, and that just, to me, speaks to sort of the, you know, I think your glasses fell around the floor there, Mr. Vedoni. But and it just speaks to just sort of the complexity, the nuance, all of that goes into just learning how to manage these dollars, learning how to help educate, you know, starting with educating yourself, then educating the community and helping them navigate this process. This being my 10th year on council, I've heard time and time again how some of our nonprofits, and we all know them, are working on, we talk about us working with a skeleton crew, for lack of a better way of putting it. I don't think a lot of our nonprofits have a robust staffing either, and they're wearing different hats and they're spinning a lot of plates at the same time. So my point is, I appreciate kind of the expertise that the technical skills that your staff bring to work every day, and then the time they take to help educate the broader community that's applying for these dollars, as they're not something that I don't know if just reading a handbook is sufficient for somebody to learn how to do that. Can you speak to, I know you mentioned we want to protect ourselves from liability. Historically, have we ever had to repay any CDBG or home dollars to the federal government for non-compliant that you can think of?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a free, I mean, it happens with many municipalities. It's a common occurrence.
So and I guess my point of that is we are being audited, reviewed. It's not just emailing in reports that go nowhere. So that just speaks to the importance of making sure that all the I's are dotted or all the T's are crossed. So I appreciate all the time, the skill, the effort that you and your department put into that. One of the questions I believe was answered was we were talking about, you know, how we exhaust these dollars for administrative fees. Everything has to be accounted for, correct? If you spend however many hours on it, that's reflected somewhere in a report that's audited or looked at by HUD.
Everybody has. It's just everything about this money is heavily regulated.
Understood. And then I guess just the final comment I'll make, I don't have any more questions, is that as we talk about administrative costs and things like that, and this has come up different budget seasons the last few years, we've been very fortunate for the last number of years here in the City of Bethlehem and City Hall to receive a lot of different grants. I mean, we've talked about money coming into Broad Street, money coming into parks. We've at different times talked about and been happy about the money coming in. Those typically grants are not, they're not knocking on our door to hand out grants. So I think when just as you receive more awards, there's more administration that goes into it. More time goes into applying to recognizing the funding sources, getting the data together to apply for the funding sources, receive the funding sources, the reporting, the regulation that goes into it. So I think just on paper, a byproduct of the monies that we have coming in is that we have to put money in some way, whether it's CDBG for administrative costs, general fund dollars, when we look at our budget, whatever it would be, just to make sure that we're managing the strings that come attached to getting these different awards. Mayor Reynolds, are you going to weigh in on that?
Yeah, just quickly, and that goes across the whole organization. It's not, it's in DCD, who obviously has taken on a lot of this, but it's also in Public Works, it's in Legal. Like, there's never been a time where City Hall employees are as busy as they are now, because every time we do, for example, we have a Broad Street meeting coming up that you got 7 or 8 or 9 different people. That's new work that wasn't being done 3 years ago when we didn't have that grant for $10 million to look at a project that's going to take 3 years or whatever it might be. So you're right, it is good, but every time we get one of these things, and also we're always trying to balance out, and people around here consistently, and the two people that complain the least about this within their departments that are the people that do the most work are Mr. Alcohol and Ms. Collins, as far as what their two departments take on when we get these grants, as far as surveys and easements. And the other place that just a ton of work is going through is the Legal Bureau with Mr. Spur. Is just, I mean, every time we get one of these things, and especially with the federal grants, it's become almost a, you know, you can't turn around without people talking about how difficult it is sometimes to be able to spend this money. And there are outside organizations that don't apply, that don't get this money, because they can't deal with it. And we have very, very sophisticated people that are here till 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night some nights, just trying to make sure we do everything. But the upside of that is because we are compliant and we do this, it increases the trust that the state and the federal government has, and then they're giving us more money, which is mostly a good thing, but it is leading to increased amount of work there. But yeah, it is. There is the most underrated aspect of our success is just the sophistication, the hard work of city employees, as you referenced, including many people that might be attorneys or engineers in these different jobs that just know what they need to do to be able to not just get the money, but get the project done. Getting the money oftentimes is the easiest part. It's getting the project done. So I appreciate the acknowledgement of that, because that is something that's going on throughout the city.
I have no other questions or comments other than thank you, Mr. Vedoni, Ms. Collins, Mayor Reynolds. Any other feedback from council? Ms. Collins, do you want to add something?
I just wanted to publicly thank Mr. Vedoni for putting all this together and also congratulate him. He did just have a new baby 10 days ago and you know, has continued to man this program and, you know, bring us here today and get the presentation together again with tight staff. We recognize and appreciate how much hard work you're putting in, and congratulations.
But he chose to come tonight. That was his choice.
I'm not going to ask him.
More work in that
hour. I absolutely have to
do it within a week.
Well, go get some rest, Mr. Vedoni. Do we have any public comment tonight? So this is specifically on the public hearing, which would be the CDBG and home presentation that we heard. So I'll open up to the wide center. Did anyone want to make a comment on the presentation? Yes, sir. I'll remind everybody, just like our council meetings, this is time to make comment on anything we heard. And I do ask everyone, pardon, to respect our 5-minute time limit. And if you don't mind giving your name for the record for our city clerk.
Mike O'Hare, 632 4th Avenue. Just a couple questions I had when I looked over the draft plan. And of course, I'm not an expert on it, so these may be easy questions to answer. I did email Mr. Vedoni, but I guess he's very busy with the new baby and everything else. So there were 5 questions I had. One was, is the $1.4 million and the $400,000, is that for 1 year or is that spread out over 5 years? I couldn't quite catch that, whether you know it was going to be just a one, like a 5-year grant, or you get that every single year. And then the other question I had was, when I was looking at the plan, there are 4 census tracts in the city, 105, 108, 110, and 112, that are designated as like the most disadvantaged areas. 2 of those are the south, basically the south side of Bethlehem. The other one is up in the Marvine, Pembroke area. And the other one kind of circles north side 27, the north side 2027 area. So my question was, are those funds being used to benefit those census tracts? I think I see some of that going like to the north side area, but I'm not sure about the south side areas and the Marvine Pembroke area, how that those funds are used to benefit those areas. And then just to go in the weeds a little bit, the HUD identifies households who are they consider in need of help in 4 ways: cost burden, overcrowding, inadequate kitchen facilities, and inadequate plumbing facilities. And so how does the city identify those? How do you know a house doesn't have a proper kitchen or a proper bathroom? Do they self-report? Is that come through the city zoning officer or some, or you know, code enforcement or something like that? It was just a question I had. And the goals on pages 132 to 136, some of them are specific to Northside 2027, but a lot of them seem very vague to me. Are there specific, and maybe, I think you kind of answered that a little bit tonight. Some of them didn't really see, to me, they didn't seem very specific. Were there specific projects, specific houses that you're going to work on? And then the last thing was the analysis of impediments. The AI report claims there are systemic unfair housing practices in the city, the way I take it. And it seems like those claims are based on outside reports, like they're taking outside reports and saying that applies to the city, and some questionable real estate advertisements. Like there were some advertisements that they said this is potentially discriminatory, so it proves that there's unfair housing practices in the city. That seemed to me a little shaky. So those are just some of my thoughts. Mr. Vidoni, you're very busy, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. I will remind everybody, as this time to comment, there also will be no action tonight. There will be a resolution in a future council agenda, so the council will have further opportunity to ask questions that we might have before we vote on anything. And of course, Mr. Vidoni, in between his infant, can respond at his convenience. Any other feedback? Mr. Ancap.
Stephen Intowns. I didn't intend to ask a question, but the gentleman provoked a thought. Considering the South Side, the dramatic change in the structure of the South Side in terms of housing, 50, 60 years ago, it was residential. And single families owned many of the properties and rented to students per room. And that's dramatically changed because quite a center core of the city is now student housing. And whether these rules and regulations apply to student housing equivalent to single family homes, I don't know whether that's a valid question. But the point being that it certainly affected the quality of life on the South Side. So whether that's a factor in calculating what you're calculating, is it arisen, isn't it? And at what point are they going to change the zoning to make it three persons as unrelated, considered family rather than fond, which exacerbates and continues the problem that existed, and which created the problem in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Antal. Anyone else want to make comment on Mr. Vidoni's presentation? Okay, thank you, everyone. A related proposed resolution will be placed on Council's July 15, 2025 agenda. The public hearing is adjourned. We'll move on to our regular council meeting. Approval of the minutes for June 17, 2025. Any comments on the minutes? Seeing none, we'll continue on. Moving on to public comment. So this will be our public comment. We'll start with anything not being voted on. Again, I ask everyone to recognize the 5-minute time limit. We had one person sign up in advance, Artie Curatola.
Hi, I'm Artie Curatola, 852 Wall Street, Pennsylvania. I'd like to make it clear, especially for anybody in any of the Mayberry RFD New Jerseys that are listening, we in Bethlehem have an unbeatable police force and deserve the JAG grant federal and state funds more than with any of these cities or boroughs that wind up having police forces where their police officers do not respect their badges. They commit perjury, police brutality, conditions unbecoming of a police officer, and excessive force. We don't do that in Bethlehem. As I was a witness from a person who I personally know, I'm not going to mention his name, but a few weeks ago, if he would have did what he did in some of those places in New Jersey, they would have heard him. I was harassed and assaulted by police in Asbury, New Jersey on my birthday on June 22nd at a place that I performed at. For over 3 hours, I was only supposed to perform for 3 hours. The person that owned the place did not stop us from performing. He got all upset because I had a vegan cake that I gave to the people that he said I could bring and give it to the people. He said, now my people aren't going to have dessert. They're not going to spend $10, $15 on dessert. I'm not paying you. I said, look, Attila. Oh, no, sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned his name. I said, you know, really, the fact remains that you told me it's okay to bring the cake. And we played. We performed for you. Consumer theft is what it is. If somebody came to your place and ran up a $300 bill and they didn't pay because they said, your waitress didn't bring us any water, but yet they ate all your food, the police would take him or her away and charge him. But anyway, not in this case. I was charged and arrested. And then I spent about 4 hours in a hospital around 11 p.m. to around 2:30 in the morning. The next day, later that day, I had to return to the ER. Today, on July 1st, I had to see my family doctor at the Veterans Administration about an ongoing problem that was caused by approximately a 30-year-old cop who I believe never served our country. If you could take a look at the video that the police officer had on his jacket as he was facing me, you will clearly see that I didn't do anything out of line, and there was no need for the officer's overzealous actions upon using excessive force on a 77-year-old U.S. Army military veteran who weighs only about 140 pounds, especially on his birthday. He never even asked me if I was a military veteran, even though I was wearing a bandana of the United States flag on my head. However, I did say to him, is this the way that you treat all American military veterans who serve your country so that you can have a prestigious job that you apparently don't appreciate having? That's the most insulting thing I said to him. You can call me if you wish. My phone number is 484-635-6411. Since this incident, I haven't been sleeping that well. I've written 10 books within 2 years and had my first one published on Amazon and Kindle. The publishing of my first book put me through less stress than what I went through on my birthday on June 22nd. And publishing of my first book, Malibu, turned all my hair white. But all these Mayberry RFD police forces, they should not get as much money as Bethlehem police at Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and other cities that are upstanding get. They shouldn't get anything. And if I have anything to do about it, I will file the papers to make sure that Asbury, New Jersey, and other parts of New Jersey will not get any JAG grant, or at least a lot less than what they're normally getting. So you can thank me if you're getting a few $50,000 or $100,000 or more less. God bless you, but Bethlehem deserves it. We deserve the grant money.
Thank you, Mr. Curatola. So that exhausts our list of who has signed up in advance. So I'll go around the room as is custom. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment, public comment? I'll turn to the center. Anyone in the wide center? Mr. Shire?
Hillshire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. As Arnold once said, I'm back. Surgery was successful. I can report that the grass is not only greener on the other side, it's greener everywhere. This was a cataract surgery for those who don't know. I found two copies of what appears to be a new map and guide out in the City Hall lobby. And it's not a booklet anymore, it's just a fold out. So they don't mention the restaurants and everything. But it still does not acknowledge the existence of the west side. There's a north side and a south side, but anyone who didn't know would assume there's no west side. And it doesn't even mention Burnside Plantation this time. Well, actually it does in the text, but not in the map. And one other thing, I learned that the Touchdown Theater was founded in 1891. So, on to one more thing. I would like to applaud the answers of the police chief to questions about immigration in the current issue of the Bethlehem Press. This thoughtful and sensitive response makes me even prouder to be a native of Bethlehem. But what can we do to resist this senseless abduction of working people who only wish to live and work in a country where they can feel relatively safe while obeying the laws? We are told to passively resist. What form can that take? Well, it is distressing that only one name is known of the 17 kidnapped from 510 Flats. One thing we can do is to publicize these abductions by maintaining a list of the names of the abductees with pictures, if possible. This idea came from my sister, and she mentioned the back when Argentina had the military junta in control, and people were disappearing and permanently, actually, in that case. And so we could perhaps do something like this here. At the very least, I hope that someone somewhere is compiling the numbers nationwide. It would, however, be a mistake for any governmental entity to do endeavor to do this, for this national administration has exhibited a propensity to punish anyone who publicly disagrees with it. It's good to be back.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the wide center who I said, I'll go left to right, sir, in the back left corner? Or my back left? Thank you.
How you doing? I'm Brett Schaefer. I passed a sign and I came in late. I wanted to read it. It's here. Please respect your new town hall. No food or drink permitted inside. Only water allowed. I wasn't sure if that was a new sign, but last week, specifically, Brian Callahan, right? You know what I'm about to say?
Sir, I'll ask you to address either myself as chair or all of council.
Okay, sorry. But I mean, only one guy was like...
Yeah, I ate a pretzel and I apologize.
A pretzel?
Mr. Yeah. We're not going to get into a back and forth, gentlemen.
Is that what you came here to talk about?
Mr. Callahan, I'm going to ask you to not interject. Gentlemen, Mr. Callahan, he has the floor, so I'm going to ask him a continuous comment.
I'm just having a dialogue.
You're interrupting him.
I'll hang out.
Gentlemen, I'm going to ask one more time to stop this. Sir, please keep going. Mr. Callahan, I'll ask you to recognize normal rules of decorum. Sir, I'll ask you to address me as chair or off council. Continue with your comments, please.
Let me take a second to think about what was just said under someone's breath that's sitting up there with you. Sorry, give me a second. I'll read the first two words of that sign again. Please respect. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. O'Hare, I believe you had your hand up.
Yeah. Mike O'Hare, I won't take a lot of time. Just one of the things I wanted to bring up about these ICE raids that we're experiencing in the city. One of the things I haven't heard about is the employer's responsibility. Employers are responsible to make sure that employees are vetted correctly, that they're working legally, that they're following all the laws, that they're OSHA trained, et cetera, et cetera. And we haven't heard one thing about that in this whole discussion. And I'm not expecting City Council to do necessarily anything about that, but I just want to bring that perspective into the discussion. I know that this building was built by a very well-known developer in the city. I know that there's a lot of campaign contributions that people receive from developers. I know that there are principals that work for that developer that are connected to people that sit on City Council. None of that's necessarily incorrect, but I just want to bring the perspective that an employer is responsible to make sure that the people who are working for him are vetted correctly and are legal to work. I know of at least one other contractor that bid on that job and didn't get the job because they were charging too much, but they make sure that all of their employees are vetted and legal to work. So where is the responsibility for this employer that allowed these illegals to be working in that building? And who knows how they're being treated? Are they being treated correctly? If you're working illegally, that gives that employer a lot of power over you. They can, I'm not saying it happened or didn't happen, they can threaten you, they can reduce your wages, they can do all kinds of things that create an unbalanced power situation. So that's a perspective that we all need to consider when we're talking about this whole situation with ICE and the arrests and people working in the country illegally. And then I'll just conclude by saying that basically people are going to treat you the way you treat them. So if the city's going to adopt a posture of non-cooperation, they're going to adopt a posture of we're going to stiff arm the federal government, that's the way they're going to treat you. They're not going to cooperate with you. So I really do think the city should, in appropriate ways, cooperate with federal authorities so that we can make sure that things are done better in our city. And then, Mr. Call, thank you for the great work on the streets. They look terrific, especially up there along North Street. Great work, and tell your team a great job.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Mr. Antalics, and then Mr. Faber.
This was intended for last meeting, so I'll do it tonight. In an earlier council meeting, a number of individuals spoke about the traffic problems on Pennsylvania Avenue. That this may be the fourth time this problem was brought up at council by a private citizen. It took a chastising comment by another citizen to provoke council to become engaged during new business. Hark back to the days of Schwader or Del Grasso. Council members then acted as public servants and responded to citizens' needs as they were publicly aired. When a citizen today uses the public meeting to complain that the administration is not responding or not listening to their complaints and then turn to council for relief, they are told to speak to an administration official who might be present at the end of the meeting. No assistance or relief is offered by council unless provoked. In the past, citizens were allowed time to speak to fully express their thoughts on matters of import to them, with council president exercising control over content and time without the 8 o'clock telling them what time it is to end. Today, council president appears to be obsessed with the itty device, for he just after 5 seconds after speaking time had expired, rudely interrupted the speaker in the middle of a thought. The speaker appeared to be severely offended by the rude behavior, they then left the podium and stormed out of the room. It appears that council president was more interested in control rather than content. This behavior has provoked a number of responsible citizens from further attendance to council meetings. A council member has recently taken upon themselves to become the judge of content of citizen public comments. The criticism is generally insulting and a bit erroneous on occasion, and in one case provoked disastrous after effects resulting from use of an incendiary word. The third class city code has elements like the Sunshine Act, which are designed to protect the citizens from the potential abuse of elected officials.
lest they forget that they are public servants and not lords and masters of the estate, and the citizens who chose them and paid them as public servants are not their serfs. The decline of democratic government we are witnessing on the national level seems to have found its way to Bethlehem. On 2 minutes left, here's what I intend to say this evening. Rather brief, but a few days ago, I found myself on 3rd Street driving past the ArchQuest new construction site. I pulled to the curb with the assistance of proper music, allowed my mind to wander back into the past. I saw Trimble's Fish Market and recalled its famous slogan, "If it swims, we have it." Nearby was a famous wholesale theater, the Redis Banana Distribution Building, which served the entire Lehigh Valley. The busy breakfast and lunch diner, along with other historic buildings. They are all gone now. What stands there is a large empty lot awaiting its new tenant, the new ArchQuest building. Sad, for we are also witnessing the ongoing destruction of Southside history. Council members with extended city occupancy voted for the COA, which would have saved the old buildings, but still allowed for the new construction. While council members with minimum residency voted for destruction of the historic sites, rarely, if ever, dwelling upon the impact on Southside history. This is a danger of voting into office people of a needy or, if not, poor knowledge of city history. In a relativistic sense, and by comparing them to long-term residents, these late arrivals might also be classed as transients.
Thank you, Mr. Italics. Mr. Faber.
Harry Faber. First, I would like to discuss the purpose of the last meeting's demonstration. 17 people were kidnapped on June 11th in the heart of the city. 17 people who were working on rehousing the displaced from the 510 Flats fire on May 2nd. To honor those stolen from us and force this administration to answer and reflect on their failure, we used 17 minutes of our collective public comment for silence. I personally asked this administration, council, and Bethlehem PD who their loyalties are to and what they are going to do to bring these people home. My comrades and I were met with avoidant eyes and mocking gestures, not to mention the mayor leaving halfway through public comment. It was clear to me and everyone in this room how incapable this government is for protecting its people. I said it then and I'll say it again. Shame. You are unfit to wield any power or authority over the people of the city. Now, I said at the last meeting, quote, "Listen to the language I am using because we must not minimize nor justify. We must recognize this for what it is," end quote. But upon further reflection and analysis, I would like to correct myself. This is not just kidnapping or human trafficking, but the literal physical enslavement of these unfortunate souls. That is more precisely what ICE and the ERO are doing. According to the article Migrant Bodies as Commodities by Gabriel Eskandari, as of July 2023, 90.8% of immigration detention occurred in for-profit detention centers. We know that many of the people kidnapped by ICE have been shipped to torture prison camps such as CECOT in El Salvador. We also know that they are currently building concentration camps here in the state, such as Alligator Alcatraz. We know that as of June 15th, there were more than 56,000 people who were being labeled as illegal immigrants in government custody when we only have the capacity for 41,000, and at least 10 have died in ICE custody since January 1st. This number, however, hides and minimizes this atrocity for what it is. People see 10 people dead and might think, oh, that's not that many. But there are tens of thousands of people not getting the medical attention they need, not getting the medication they need. A 5-month pregnant woman was forced to deliver her stillborn child while her feet were shackled after weeks of begging for medical attention and not receiving it. But she doesn't make it into the list of the 10 people, and neither does her dead child. We have already crossed all the red lines. Would it be outrageous if we were pushing people to their deaths out of airplanes? Yes. What we are seeing should cause the same type of outrage from you. These are concentration camps. This is ethnic cleansing. We are just early. We are just early enough in the process that we haven't gotten to mass murder and death yet. That is what's coming down the line. Stop waiting for some new horrific outrage. What is already happening is outrageous and bad enough. We must stop this. If this country and this city allows the enslavement of its own population, then we do not deserve to exist. I personally will not be attending the upcoming music fest. I encourage all of my comrades to boycott and strike as well. There is no time for celebration. 17 people were abducted in the city. Still no word. There is still no word where they are, if they are okay, or what this administration is doing to bring them back. This political structure only speaks one language, and it's the language of profits. It's about time the working class hits the ruling class where it hurts. I am calling for a boycott of the entirety of Music Fest until Bethlehem terminates any and all ICE collaboration, until this administration participates in community actions such as the Emergency Response Network, and most importantly, Bethlehem must bring these people home. Boycott, divest, sanction. We will demonstrate. We will boycott. We will strike. We gave you 17 minutes at the last meeting to prepare. Now it is the time for action. As Dr. King said, quote, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, end quote. No justice, no peace.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Anybody else in the Wyatt Center? Ms. Newman.
Hello, Valerie Noonan. I'm speaking off the cuff today, but do have something to say, which is I was really disappointed in the way this last meeting was run, the previous council meeting, which I did express at the time, but I really do feel that whatever you guys were trying to achieve administratively by moving the public comment to the end backfired horrifically, and I think you guys felt that. Because I'm here all the time, clearly, and I know you guys, and I know how you work and what you do. Not everyone is as familiar, and so when you do something like that, like, it really read to a lot of people as contempt, and you can see that they didn't come back. And really, your entire discussion in the new business section regarding the ICE raid just was entirely chaotic. It didn't, there were no ideas brought to the table, there were no solutions, there wasn't even really information. And you really just made it look like you don't know what you're doing, honestly. And I think the only council member who I saw bringing a lot of productive discourse to the table was Ms. Lan, who is not present today, it appears. A lot of the people who came to the past meeting, I don't know if you realize this, but they're committed activists. They may not show up here all the time, that's not their style, but these are people who are verifying ICE sightings with their own eyes and reporting them, getting legal help for people. They're people who are bringing groceries to people who are afraid to leave their house right now and go shopping. And so when they hear, we can't do anything, we can't do anything, we don't even know anything, that's really frustrating because these are people who are doing something. And so I took in my last comment at the last meeting, before my minute of silence, I asked you, like, what are you doing to bring these people home? Maybe that answer is not something that can be addressed by council, but you should be doing something. And saying things like, oh, you know, throw some money to charity, you know, that can help. There are organizations certainly that deserve the money, but we need to be looking out for our neighbors. We need to be looking left, right, the people who are next door to us, who we pass by every day, and helping those people on a practical level. This is a difficult time in history, clearly, but if you look at Palestine, there is a genocide going on over there where we're now at the point where people are being shot at as they go and try to receive food aid, which has been severely restricted. We're now seeing these plainclothes kidnappings here on American soil. And I truly do believe the boomerang effect is coming into play here. And that people need to really step up and do things here and now before it gets worse. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noonan. Did I miss anyone who wants to make comment during public comment, sir?
Sebastian Zavaruka, 341 Spring Street, Bethlehem. My public comment is just to kind of reiterate some things I had said last week. To echo some of the members of the audience, there wasn't much consensus or plan in place. I did have a proposal, which I'm going to try and approach each one of you individually, if the time allows, after this meeting, of a letter that I think could be drafted as a resolution with all of your signatures, and it's just collectively acknowledging our 4th and 14th Amendment rights as citizens and residents of this community, which is to, as we have discussed, the Emergency Response Network is something where people like myself are going out and responding to these calls on a moment's notice, and it would build confidence for myself if you all would collectively acknowledge those rights and vocalize them, as well as to build that confidence within the community. Now, this letter I have is tailored with my understanding and language of the 14th Amendment rights, and you all have, for those that I talked to, you all said you needed some time and some decompression after last meeting. I was surprised and appreciative of Brian Callahan was the only one to sign it, and I'm looking for more of your signatures as well. And again, it's just to acknowledge your understanding of what the rules and laws and our inherent rights are as citizens in this community of which you're sworn to. And I think just by lifting that and vocalizing that, it'll help bolster the community and see how you guys are, prioritizing those rights and respecting them in our community. So this is a letter that has also been passed in another town in Georgia. And so it's something that can be done, and I hope to find partnership and unity with you to pass the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else who hasn't had an opportunity to make a comment who wished to this evening? We're going to continue on with our agenda. Next public comment. Is there any ordinance or resolution that's being voted on? We didn't have anyone sign up. Would anyone like to make a comment on any of the three agenda items we're voting on tonight? Seeing none, we'll continue on. Old business, any old business from members of council? New business, any new business from members of council? Councilwoman Kwiatek?
Thank you. First of all, I agree with Mr. Faber's shirt and many of the things that were said during public comment tonight. I don't scream from the dais, so I keep that for at home, but I have certainly been doing a lot of it, certainly in the last 6 months and much earlier than that. And I do absolutely confirm your constitutional rights. Sebastian, thank you for your efforts. Thank you to everyone on the emergency response group for their efforts, for the people who came and spoke at the last meeting, for the people who come meeting after meeting to express their views. I also, on a very different note, but one that I think was a highlight for last week for me was I really appreciated the work of the folks in Ms. Collins' team Ms. Satullo and Ms. Daddario for planning an amazing trip to Philadelphia for residents of the Pembroke neighborhood, as well as some of us who got to tag along, who are working on the Choice Neighborhood Planning Grant to meet with the Philadelphia Housing Authority, the fourth largest housing authority in the nation, I learned, which is amazing. They have 80,000 residents in their public housing, which is slightly more than the number of residents we have in just our fair city altogether, which again also blew me away. The work they've done to increase affordable housing in Philadelphia with their Choice Neighborhood grants, leveraging hundreds of millions of dollars, taking over old high school buildings and transforming them into workforce development for the neighborhood. It was all incredibly impressive and inspiring, and it was great to spend a day with folks, again, from the Pembroke community and elsewhere, from our nonprofit partners, learning and soaking up that information from a really highly accomplished housing authority. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business? Mr. Callahan?
A couple things. Chief Cott, you guys saying, is there any update on the shooting at Yasko Park?
Just that it continues to be under investigation. However, I'm very, very pleased with the progress of the investigation by our Criminal Investigations Division as well as our patrol officers. So unfortunately, I can't give any more information at this time that may jeopardize that investigation, but I'm very satisfied with the status of it.
Yeah, if you could just let us know as time goes on. And then how about that standoff that was on New Street? Was that a shooting or just an incident?
So that was an incident, domestic incident that unfortunately got out of hand, and an individual barricaded himself inside the residence. And we were able to, without incident, successfully have that individual come outside and get him the help that he needs.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I want to deeply apologize to everybody up here for having a bag of pretzels at the last meeting.
I apologize often. For blowing my
Just let's excuse not me. Interrupt, please. Mr. Callahan, continue.
I have a driving school, and we all work, but I often come straight from a driving lesson straight here because of the length of that meeting. I get hangry sometimes, so I apologize for the causing a meltdown over a bag of chips or a bag of pretzels. So if I should be hungry again, I'll remove myself from the City Hall, and I'll just sit out in the hall and have my pretzel. I don't want to upset anybody. Thank you.
You're such a child.
Let's continue on with new business. Any other new business from members of council? Mr. Miller, please read 6A.
June 24th, 2025, Memorandum and Proposed Lease Agreement and Resolution, Business Administrator Eric Evans. Memorandum recommends a lease agreement involving the Clubhouse Grill, LLC, for a restaurant at the Bethlehem Golf Club. Current lease with the same entity is scheduled to expire on December 31st, 2025. The action tonight would authorize a 7-year extension beginning January 1st, 2026 and ending on December 31st of 2032.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda. 6B.
The June 20th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Joseph Lasek, Director of Financial Services, requesting the destruction of records from his department. Mr. Vlasic has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act and the records listed on the exhibit accompanying the memo fall within the categories where destruction is permitted.
And a resolution will be placed on the July 5th City Council agenda. So moving on to reports, my report, a couple announcements. The first is the Police Pension Board appeal hearing, which I previously announced, had to be rescheduled. So it's rescheduled from June 24th at 6 p.m. to August 12th at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. So again, that Police Pension Board appeal hearing will be August 12th here in Town Hall at 6 p.m. And also a reminder that a public hearing has been set for 7 p.m. on July 15th to discuss extensive amendments to the city's subdivision and land development ordinance. That review will take place, like tonight's public hearing, at the beginning of the regular council meeting here in Town Hall. The other thing I just wanted to touch on briefly, in light of sort of some of the back and forth that we all sat through earlier and some of the comments relative to other meetings. I
As president of council, and this being, you know, as I wind down my last, you know, 10 or so meetings, I've always tried to express civility up here in the center. Whether you agree with me or not, I'm not here to convince you of that. But you'll notice I typically refer to people as Mr. or Ms. if I know your name. I try not to interrupt people except for foul language, and I address that. However I talk outside of this room is irrelevant. I don't swear up here. I ask everybody to also recognize sort of the use of language. I think we live in a time where civility is incrementally eroding, especially as it comes from, you know, Washington, D.C., where we have the President of the United States using the F word publicly when being asked by the media. I just don't think there's any place for that. I don't think we need to use snarky remarks when addressing members of the public. I don't appreciate members of the public yelling up here. I understand emotions run a little high sometimes. I think we all have to do, instead of looking at externalities, look at what are we doing to invite such comments, and then be mature, starting with members of council, and I ask for, you know, the respect from the audience also, that this is a city council meeting, the first and third Tuesday of every month. I know some are more well attended, sometimes emotions are running high, like the last council meeting. Sometimes they're not as well attended, like tonight. I'm happy everybody made it out tonight. Regardless of what's on the agenda, regardless of the day I've had at work, regardless of the day we've all had, regardless of the, you know, whatever it is we're dealing with, my expectation of myself is to act with civility and respect towards everyone. As you've heard me say before, and I'll repeat it till my last meeting here in the center. Whether you agree with me or not, I try to, if nothing else, even if you don't feel heard, that you at least felt you could stand there and give your 5 minutes however you chose to. And similarly, I think we as council members should show everyone that respect, as we don't engage in a back and forth, and I've repeated that time and time again, to not interrupt anyone when they're speaking. One of my pet peeves, as you've heard, is also talking over each other. I think people have been pretty good about it. I ask that we continue doing that, especially for my last 10 or so meetings, and just come into this town hall, as we're so fortunate to do, the remainder of the year at least, under my, you know, council presidency, to just think, what are we doing, rather than take grievance when our names come up. And sometimes I take grievance, but again, I try not to interrupt people when they do such, and I do appreciate everyone watching their language. You know who you are if I've interrupted you before. So that is all I'm going to say on my report tonight, and I'm moving on.
Mr. President, can I make a comment?
No, Mr. Callahan, that's just my president's report. I'm going to move on with the agenda tonight.
Thank you. I'll make it next meeting.
Understood. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. Just a couple of quick reports. First of all, is as I mentioned last time, and as council has supported, Captain Griffin, soon to be Chief Griffin, Chief Reich is retiring from the city this week. Thursday is his last day. He is here, as always, as a trooper in attendance for this meeting, but, I just can't. I made the comment last time, and, you know, I think everybody understands the fantastic job he's done, both since he took over as chief, but also in a career that spanned almost three decades as committed to the city of Bethlehem. And, you know, we obviously wish Chief Reich well on his way, but as just a, you know, a little note on his professionalism, he has been working to the bell as far as Music Fest preparations, as far as all of the transition handoffs with Chief-elect Griffin. Chief Reich is, he only knows how to do things one way, which is the way, you know, a lot of our employees do, but I just can't thank him enough for all the fantastic work he's done for the fire department and all the service he's provided. And Chief Griffin is going to take over right in time for July 4th, so make sure you're calling him and emailing him right, you know, over the weekend. We couldn't be happier either about Chief Griffin taking over, and already in the past couple weeks he's just doing a phenomenal job, and I could not be more thankful and appreciative for both of them. But I do, if you have a moment at the end of the meeting, please thank Chief Reich. I know that he is old-fashioned in his sense of service to this community and to the city, and we are going to miss him. Chief Griffin's going to do a fantastic job, but it's always bittersweet when employees like Chief Reich are retiring. So I just want to publicly thank Chief Reich for an unbelievable job and I don't know if you're coming back for your citation or not, so I do think we should give you a big round. At the other end of their career with the city, we do have Ms. Fletcher here in the back, who probably didn't want me to recognize her, but she's our new director of planning and zoning. I know many of you have met her, stepping into just the unbelievable shoes of Darlene Heller. But Ms. Fletcher is doing a fantastic job, and if you haven't had a chance to talk to her or meet with her, one of the things I know she's doing this summer is trying to get around to talk to everybody, meet with everybody, so please, if you have an opportunity to sit down and talk to her, she's got a lot of great ideas, she's already been a great addition to the team. And then just my third and final announcement is Ms. Santoro and myself have been working on, and we posted something on social media about it today, on July 26th, we are actually hosting a panel and a flag raising in commemoration of the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act here in Town Hall from 11 to 12:15, and we are titling it Reflecting on Progress, Advancing Accessibility, a panel on disability rights in Bethlehem. And we've gotten partnerships with the United Way, Spellers Empowering Education non-speakers, Lehigh University Art Galleries, LUAG, the Library, the Human Relations Commission, and the city, to be able to put together this panel. And then afterwards, we are going to raise the flag outside in, as I said, commemoration of the 35th anniversary of the passing of the ADA, which we hope will become an annual thing moving forward. We have a lot of great people on the panel, business owners, people within our community, some people that have talked about these issues on a national level from Bethlehem. Shane Burkaw is going to join us through Zoom. So we have a really wonderful group, but we want it to be the beginning of a new tradition that we're doing every year. And I think now, and this conversation has come up a lot, when we talk about the ADA and we talk about what the ADA was about and the idea about giving people the opportunity and giving them what they need to be successful, it's very familiar to a lot of the conversations we're having now in a lot of different ways as far as what it means to build an equitable community. So we believe strongly that this is going to be a beautiful day where we're going to talk about the things that are going well, the things that the city needs to improve on, the things that America needs to improve on in this area, and I encourage everybody to come out. So it's 11 to 12:15 is the panel, and then we are going to go outside and make a couple of marks from 12:20 to 12:30. And that concludes my report, President Colon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. We do not have any committee reports this evening, nor do we have any ordinances for final passage. Mr. Miller, moving on to new ordinances, please read Bill 31-2025.
This actually is for second reading.
Oh, pardon, I misread.
8A is
please read 8A.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2025 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 31-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Lair?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 32-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Lair?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. We don't have any new ordinances this evening.
Right.
And then we have one lone resolution, 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a lease agreement with the Clubhouse Grill, LLC, any agreements and documents as deemed necessary by the City Solicitor for a restaurant at the Bethlehem Golf Club. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Mr. Callahan.
Just a quick question. Mr. Spurk, that on the under 6A1, or AI as it is, Lisa's first option to cater, is that new language?
let me defer to Mr. Evans, who was the party that actually negotiated the lease.
No, no, that's the same.
I thought that they were using the pavilion. The people like a golf, like if they had a golf tournament there, I thought they were allowed to bring in their own food, but they couldn't. They had to buy the liquor from the clubhouse. But I thought that that they were allowed to bring in their own food.
You mean for tournaments? If you have a tournament, you can bring
it. If Freedom or Liberty had, like, you know, a golf tournament,
yes,
they were always allowed to bring in their own food.
There's a couple that are still recognized that are grandfathered under that agreement, right. Mr. Donnelly and the Clubhouse Grill. So those will continue, the football team, the basketball, the Freedom, the bicycles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. And then I just want to make sure, so the lease or the liquor license remains with the city.
Yes.
It's his until the lease is over, and then it's back, it retains in our possession.
Yes. Yeah, that all stays the same.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Passes 6-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safely, everyone, and have a safe holiday weekend. We're done recording.